This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey guys, it's Damon from the PureCast. The New Japan PureCast is proudly sponsored by GaijinCollectibles.com, your number one source for Japanese wrestling merchandise shipped straight from Japan to your mailbox. Check out their selection of in-stock merch like t-shirts, action figures, magazines, trading cards, or use their purchasing service to order items from Japanese websites like the New Japan Shop. Like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, GaijinCollectibles.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Jackson. This is my brother, Nick Jackson. We're the mother effing Young Bucks, and you are listening to the New Japan PuroCast. Suck it! Super kick party to sweet me. All right, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the New Japan PuroCast, your weekly audio source for all things in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling. My name is Colin Miller, being joined alongside, as always, by Mr. Damon McDonald. It is Sunday morning, August 20th, at the time that we are recording this, and today is going to be a fun show. We're going to do a little listener Q&A, but first, Damon, I'd like to talk a little G1 Climax 26 fallout, because I think that the general consensus is that this was a very special tournament, but there are certain matches that I kind of wanted to go back and revisit, because on last week's podcast, I think I kind of undersold a lot of the matches, because, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's kind of hard for us. You know, we do this podcast once a week, and during the G1 Climax, there's just match after match, so it does get difficult to cover everything. You feel me, Damon?
Yeah, it's tough to absorb. It's tough when you're in the mix and you're swimming in the pool of great matches, and we do a show once a week. It's somewhat difficult to capture your feelings and capture your love or hate in a 2-hour podcast every Sunday. So I definitely get that. So I'm glad that we are going to kind of go back, and we've been able to digest a little bit more of what we saw and the ramifications of what leads to what will be an exciting couple months here.
I'd like to start off with talking about Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada. So I went back and I rewatched their match from Sumo Hall.
Yeah.
And what an extraordinary match and what an extraordinary trilogy. And it has garnered a lot of comparisons to Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that is an entirely fair comparison, because one trilogy took place in 1989, the other one took place in present day, and professional wrestling as a whole has changed and evolved over the course of that time. Damon, you were there during the whole Flair Steamboat period. I mean, you lived through that. You watched all of those matches.
Yeah. See, I think it's a really strong comparison. Just for Western eyes, and because at the time it really was, you know, three of the best matches that you'll dare see, and they had their hour draw, or you know, their hour long match, and a final match that led into, you know, one of the coolest angles ever, with Terry Funk being one of the judges, and then him, you know, kicking the shit out of Ric Flair. Ric Flair takes, you know, a month or two off, and Terry Funk is running the show. And of course, Terry Funk is, you know, a great heel. And you don't get those things every day. You get two guys, Steamboat and Flair, who are competitive as fuck, who, you know, want to outdo each other, but yet still are best friends, and were even business partners at one time, and maybe still are. I don't know. No, it was a solid time. It was an exciting time because really, you know, WCW at the time was kind of floundering. They were kind of stale. They were really stale, to be truthful. And it was really a shot of adrenaline and a shot in the arm for WCW at the time. And again, having a young, fresh, uninjured, raring to go, you know, great Muda, that certainly didn't hurt. And an Eddie Gilbert and a Barry Windham and a Luger and Brian Pillman. And, you know, at that time it was fresh and new and it felt new and it felt like an exciting time.
Would you say that was, that trilogy of matches, would you say that for 1989, that was state of the art pro wrestling in North America?
In North America. Yes. Because again, in Japan, you know, even though All Japan, you know, right around that time was starting to turn the corner in the sense of clean finishes, right? They always had great matches, but the finishes were just the most fucking frustrating thing in the world. You'd be watching a great match, 15 minutes in, they just decide they're going to go start brawling in the crowd, and, you know, next thing you know, the bell's ringing, and you're like, what in the fuck? It was the most maddening thing in the world. Nobody was doing jobs. But in North America, I think so. I think Stampede was starting to really get hot there. Like, you would get tapes. It was a really good time to be. Now, where do those matches compare to what we see today?
And can you compare them is the question that a lot of people are asking.
You can to a certain degree, right? Look, if you hear Flair and Steamboat are going to go an hour, you're not thinking and you're not going to be getting what you see with Kenny Omega and Okada going an hour. It just wasn't happening back then. And again, it's a different style and it's a different, I guess, a different formula to what pro wrestling is today and what pro wrestling was back then. But in 1989, let me tell you, these matches were the shit. You know, these were matches that you could pop in and watch all the time.
I watched the first one the other day from the Chi-Town Rumble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where Steamboat wins the belt.
Yes. That's the one. And I find that I'm able to kind of put myself back in that time period. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not expecting big move. I can kind of sit back and enjoy those matches for the great works of art that they were for their time and still are.
But I compare them more to Okada Tanahashi matches than I do Okada Omega matches.
I'm glad that you said that because I was thinking, you know, I've been hearing the Steamboat Flair Omega Okada comparisons all week, and I was thinking to myself yesterday, you know, Tanahashi and Okada is really New Japan's equivalent of Steamboat Flair.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And maybe matches that, like, to me, when I watch Omega and Okada, even though they're juniors, I think Liger and Benoit. You know, I think that those type of matches, or maybe even, like, you know, the All Japan 90s stuff. But I don't really like.
What about Dynamite Kid versus Tiger Mask in the sense that it was a style that, like, nobody had seen up to that. Like they were doing things that nobody had seen up to that point.
Right, but I here's the thing. I don't know if I would go that route because, yes, okay, while Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask matches were revolutionary and the speed in which they did things was mind-blowing. Like, you know, I'm a kid and I'm watching the USA Network. And I see, you know, Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, and my head explodes. You know, you're seeing because on a show like that at Madison Square Garden, I mean, you got, you know, Johnny Rods versus fucking Charlie Fulton doing a headlock for 15 minutes. You know, it's like what Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid did at that time. Again, we're talking in the 80s, early 80s, was absolutely unbelievable. With Okada and Omega, I don't think that you're seeing like spectacular moves that are revolutionary. You're seeing spectacular moves that you may have seen before done to perfection. it's the subtleties that really get you in these type of matches. It's not so much the death-defying moves, which are great, right? Like the dangerous spots, those are great. To me, it's the subtle things, like how perfect an Okada dropkick is, right? Like, and when he hits it, right? So it kind of does, even though we're talking about spectacularness and we're talking about these dangerous high moves, really the things that really get these matches to the point where we're talking 6 stars and 7 stars and 6.5 stars is the subtleties of these matches.
And speaking of, right, the subtleties, you know what really hit me watching the last Okada Omega match was Okada's facial expressions. They've got to be the best in the business. I mean, he has got to be one of the best sellers in the business right now. And I think that sometimes gets lost in the midst of all the spectacular moves that are going on.
That's exactly right. And I really feel that. And again, not to just harp on the dropkick, but it's a fucking dropkick. How many dropkicks have we seen in our entire lives in a pro wrestling match? But it's the height in which he does it and just his perfect connection. And truth be told, it's also Kenny Omega who, again, I've said it 1,000 times, sells and ragdolls better than anyone else in this business.
I think one of the criticisms with Omega is that sometimes the selling and the facial expressions are a little over the top. Now, I personally don't feel that way. I don't have a problem with his selling at all.
But that's who he is.
Right.
He's over the top, period. He's a guy that's just goofy, period. He's the guy that you hang out with at the bar who's, you know, who's doing fucking magic tricks to impress chicks. Right? You know what I mean? Like, he's just going to be a little bit off.
Damon drawing on real life experience.
I don't know how to do magic. I'm jealous of those fucking guys. Like, you see him on Instagram and, you know, they're like making fucking bottles disappear and shit. And I'm just like, oh, that'd be cool. That'd be, you know, I don't know.
Making just, bottles disappear.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, I can make a bottle disappear, but it has nothing to do with magic. It's all science. That's a bar trick. Look, it's, you know, Kenny Omega is a unique character in and himself. So people who think he's over the top, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're watching. He's never been not over the top. You know, I think it fits him perfectly. If a guy like, I don't know, you know, Shibata started doing that, yeah, I'd be like, okay, this is a little out of character. Is he on drugs? You know, it is what it is. But no, again, sorry to loop back again, but it's those moments of subtlety that aren't that subtle, but really are subtle, are amazing to me. And I think that's what makes those matches. The matches in 1 year, we've had this storyline and these connecting of the dots with these two guys who are at the peak of their game. And Steamboat and Flair were not at their peak. Let's be honest, right? They were probably, even though Flair went on forever, and so really did Steamboat, but truth be told, if you were going to arc their career, they're probably either just slightly below their peak, because I think their peak was probably, both of them, physically, wrestling-wise, was probably mid-80s, right? To me. Even though, you know, I would say like mid-80s.
Right.
So at the end of the 80s, they're probably just a notch or two below their peak. Whereas I think Omega and Okada,
I mean, they're in their physical prime, arguably.
Physical prime. I don't even think they've reached their traditional wrestling maturity, because people talk about the 30s being that time, right? So I really even think that they have more to grow.
About Okada, though, is that it seems like he's been mature for quite some time now.
Isn't it amazing?
It truly is
amazing. It really is an amazing thing that the guy's in his 20s. It does blow my mind. So you have all these elements combining and colliding, and a big stage and you know, a big spotlight. These are all important things, and these are all things that make this feud and this trilogy and these matches, to me, you know, the greatest that I've seen. And before that, it was Okada and Tanahashi.
So you're making that statement that the Okada Omega trilogy, that's your favorite trilogy.
Yeah, without question.
More so than Flair Steamboat.
Absolutely. Without question. I said last week, I was like, you know, if I had to sit people down and be like, okay, I don't know, you know, you're a casual wrestling fan, or you're on the fence with it, or, you know, or you don't know anything about it, or, you know, hey, I'm with a bunch of people and I want to show you this. This is what I'm into. I'm going Omega Okada every day of the week, right?
I think last week on the Purocast, I made the statement that if I was going to sit down a casual wrestling fan or a WWE fan and introduce them to the New Japan product, I would show them Okada versus Omega from the Tokyo Dome. Well, I'm going to go back on that statement. I would still show them Okada versus Omega, but I think I would honestly show them this G1 match from Sumo Hall simply because it is significantly shorter than their other two matches. And I think that that one in particular would be a lot easier for a casual fan to get into simply because it started out on fire right out of the gate.
Yeah, but I would actually start with the Dome.
Really?
Because I think the stage and the idea of a wrestling show being in an arena like that does kind of lend to a little bit of this is a real thing. You know what I mean? This is not something that's just in some high school gym.
It does, right? But you also have to remember that that's a 46-minute match, okay?
And but it flies. It really flies.
It does.
Like, I would have no problem showing somebody that hour match. Like, if I were going to say, sit down and watch, like, again, just some random person, you know, whatever. Sit down and watch an hour pro wrestling match. I guarantee you their eyes are going to roll in the back of the head. They're going to be like, oh, you want me to do what?
Well, that's what I mean.
But I would have no fear doing that with Omega and Okada. Like, I couldn't give them Flair Steamboat 2 out of 3 falls from New Orleans. Right?
No.
No. I couldn't do it.
From Clash of the Champions.
They would be out cold, you know, looking for the beer, the bar, whatever. They'd just be like, all right, listen, I'm bored out of my mind. Right? I get it. Arm bars. Great. But if I showed them Dominion, I guarantee they'd be in it. I guarantee they'd be in it. And here's the thing, if not, then they're not a pro wrestler. They'll never be a pro wrestling fan. And that is what it is. I truly believe that. But here's the thing too. You know, in a 24-hour period, Colin, Omega put on another performance of a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. And people were talking last year. They were saying that weekend performance, Omega versus Naito, Omega versus Goto, like that had to be the best back-to-back performance in pro wrestling history. Well, I think that Omega just beat himself.
Right. I absolutely 100% agree. And that's, again, 24 hours is, that's not a long time to recuperate and recover. And not for nothing, I'm sure a guy like Kenny Omega, and again, I don't know, I don't want to speak for him, but I'm going to speak for him. What the fuck? I'm sure a guy like Kenny Omega is the type of guy that, you know, when he's on an airplane or he's in a car or he's just bored out of his fucking mind, you know, aside from shooting Elite videos, he's thinking of matches and what he wants to do and what would be cool and what would, you know, what would people enjoy. I'm sure he's that kind of guy. But that's hard to do in a 24-hour period against, you know, one guy who, you know, he was almost expected to have a great match. You know, at this point, he can't not have a great match. You know, that's a lot of pressure against Okada. And then follow that up with, well, you got the pressure of all these other G1 finals, which have been great, and now you need to do that again. Again, his dance partners are great. It's not like he's out there with a fucking hockey stick trying to have a 5-star match. But still, there's pressure that's there. But he's lived up to that challenge every single time. So, and again, in a 24-hour period is even more remarkable to me. I guess my point being in this is Kenny Omega more deserving of Wrestler of the Year? I know Kevin Kelly sent us like he was talking about how we were talking about it last week. And Kevin Kelly, again, first, again, I don't want to you know, continue to kiss Kevin Kelly's ass, but goddamn, that guy, he puts us over big time.
And he goes above and beyond when he really doesn't have to.
But it's awesome that he does. And here's the thing, it's heartfelt, and he's honest, and I appreciate the fact that he thinks so highly of the job that we do. So it's awesome. Is this are we overlooking Kenny Omega in Wrestler of the Year? Or just because we're so enamored with the year that Okada is having?
Well, here's the thing. I think that you can make the argument for either one of them as Wrestler of the Year. I mean, when we have the PuroCast year-end awards in December...
I'm not looking forward to that.
we've got to figure out some sort of a system for that. I mean, there has to be like a ranked voting software out there that will make it a lot easier for us rather than having to individually input all of these votes in an Excel file. I mean,
or a college intern.
or a college intern who's looking to make a few extra bucks on the side.
A few extra bucks. I'm looking for college credits. We can do that, right? We can. The PureCast is accredited, right?
I'll look into that, Damon. I'll get back to you on that one. But
I mean, imagine that on a resume. Hi, my name is Brittany Thomas. I interned with the New Japan PureCast.
Hey, look, I have Howard Stern on my resume. So
yeah, exactly. Right. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you ever wonder, I know this is completely off base, but do you ever wonder, like, what people think of us just by our voices? Like, because you mentioned Howard, and I was thinking about this the other day. Like, you know how, like, Howard, it has a very distinctive voice, right?
Yeah.
You hear Howard's voice, and it is a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Communicable? That's not a word.
Communicable.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go with that.
I just made up that fucking word. But it is a voice that draws you in, right? It is a captivating voice. It is a
conversational?
Conversation, but more than that, it is a almost hypnotic. Like you kind of get into him just via his voice, right?
I just always think about, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I always try and picture in my mind what these podcasters actually look like in real life. Absolutely. And 9 times out of 10, my image in my head is completely way off base.
Me too. But I wonder if people do that with us, like people who have never met us and people who have never seen us. Like, I wonder if, like, you know, people are like a guy and this girl driving in their car, right? And they're listening to us. And I wonder if, like, do you ever wonder that? I wonder that. Stupid.
Not lately, right. But it does cross my mind sometimes. But getting back to your question, is Kenny Omega the Wrestler of the Year? To me, I'm sorry. I've still got to put him at number two. Just a smidge behind Okada, just a smidge. If Okada is at 5 stars, Kenny Omega's 4.75.
Okay. How about 5.75?
Yes, 5.75. the first ever 5.75 star match, ladies and gentlemen. Naito versus, like, Omega.
I was like, that has to be a fucking rib. Like, that just has to be him just taking the piss out of us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then. Being that we're going to get a lot of questions from our listeners, which is one of my favorite shows, by the way. I don't know why. I just love doing these type of shows.
We haven't done one in a while. We were supposed to do one a few weeks back, but now we're making up for that. It's going to be a lot of fun, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, okay, fair enough. And I'm in agreement, too. As of right now, you know, August is wrapping up. September is right around the corner. Okada's my Wrestler of the Year with, again, Kenny Omega just an ass hair behind, whatever that means.
And just an ass hair behind Kenny Omega is probably Tetsuya Naito for me.
Yep. Okay. So let me ask you this. If Kenny Omega's number two, right, is he still better than everyone else in the entire world?
In the entire world, we're talking all promotions.
Yeah, why not?
Listen,
like,
Damon.
Like if there wasn't an Okada, Kenny Omega would have arguably one of the best years of any pro wrestler alive, right?
If there was, well, I think he still has had one of the best years out of any pro wrestler alive. But
he's got Okada right there. Like how frustrating has that have to be for him? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be like,
I don't think he really thinks about it.
I don't think so either. But you know,
you obviously think about it.
Now, I do. Well, listen, I do a podcast. What do you want from me? I think about these things a lot. But I just find it amazing to me that a guy like Kenny Omega and the year that he's having, even a guy like, you know, we said it before, even a guy like Naito. Naito is having a better year than just about anybody else in the entire world.
Hey, he's the most popular guy in New Japan, I think.
I know, but not even just popularity, like even match quality wise, right? And then, you know, let's be fair. A Hiroshi Tanahashi, who, you know, Meltzer threw five at him, right, for his match against Naito, right?
Yeah, which was great, which was a different kind of match than Omega versus Okada, certainly.
Yeah, and let's not forget, he's working with one fucking arm. The guy had a five. And again, listen, I'm sure guys wrestle with injuries that we don't know of and the severity of whatever. But let's let that sink in for a second. Hiroshi Tanahashi, again, once again, in a big fucking spot, in a spotlight match, working with one motherfucking arm, right, has a five-star match.
That's certainly a testament to who Hiroshi Tanahashi is and his G1 climax as a whole. You know, all things taken into consideration, it was great.
I watched that Zack Sabre Jr. match. It was on Access the other day on Friday night.
How was the commentary?
I mean, you know.
You're not too high on it.
Well, here's the thing. I think in a studio environment, Ross and Barnett are decent.
I think so, right? Too. I think so, right? Too.
In a studio environment. In a live environment, they are out of their element. They just can't keep up. Barnett does – listen, you know what it is.
We've talked about it.
It just is what it is. You can't put those guys in a live environment and expect them to be able to call a New Japan show. I'm sorry. Just the proof's in the pudding. In a studio environment, in a canned environment, in an environment where they could possibly retake if something gets totally fucking botched, yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's not bad. What were we saying? What were we talking
Tanahashi.
About?
Tanahashi's G1.
Yeah. Watching Zack Sabre, junior match. Great match.
Absolutely.
And then follow that up with Ibushi and Naito. Again, that was night one.
One of the matches of the tournament for a lot of people.
I think so. So, you know, Meltzer was throwing the snowflakes around like they were going out of style, right? I mean, just in the past, the last, what did he give, another six? He gave another six.
Yeah, he gave Omega Okada another six, and he gave the Naito Omega final 5 3/4. Whatever that means.
What do you think of these stars? What do these things mean to you?
Not much anymore. I don't want to say that. Like you alluded to earlier, I think that part of it is him ribbing a lot of people, and it's sort of like a little tongue in cheek wink and a nod sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like at the end of the day, though, like what is a 5 3/4 star match? You know what I mean? Like, that's why I kind of prefer adjectives over asterisks when I'm talking matches.
Even though we always say snowflakes because that's the vernacular of the thing. But
yeah, we're always throwing out snowflakes. But like, I'm more comfortable saying like, Damon, wow, what a phenomenal match that Omega versus Naito finale was. Like, it's so, I don't know. It's so weird almost to kind of put a number behind that match, like a scale. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you could do it, but at the end of the day, you know, a great match is a great match.
Right. I don't know how, like, I guess he his enjoyment, like, once you reach five, it kind of makes, I don't know, like, I guess he enjoyed one over the other, obviously, just by giving one a lower number. But it is. I saw that 5 3/4, and I sent you that text.
And I tweeted it.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I just was just like, this guy is out of his mind. Great. Like, just because the first thing I thought of was, you know, he's just fucking busting balls at this point. Yeah. But you know, that's Dave. I think. Like, here's the thing. I respect his opinions.
For sure.
And I think his opinions kind of correlate a lot with what I look for in a pro wrestling match.
Same.
And I think, you know, he's just saying these matches were off the charts great. And really, that's how I read that as. But, you know, anything five and above is off the charts great. And some things he even thinks, you know, literally pants down. Dave is watching these matches.
That's really the highest rating right there. Pants down.
Pants down.
Like
right?
once you get to that, you
right.
know, that's like essentially the Purocast version of 5 stars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Once a match gets a pants down, you know it's something special.
Yeah, you got to watch it. Business is good, right?
Yeah.
G1 business is good. You know, the profit margins are up with this tour, with this G1. I don't know where they're putting the bodies, but they're finding seats and they're shoving them in with a shoehorn. Literally, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, hanging off the rafters. So that's positive to me, too. So they're doing something right, Colin. They're doing something right. So for everybody who, and again, everybody, we can put us in that bucket, for every, you know, questionable thing that they do, and every thing that we say they neglect, whether it be the tag straps or the junior belt or whatever we got a problem with, or booking decisions in G1, guess what? Fucking fans are buying tickets. Fans are buying tickets. And once again, Colin, do you have any requests and questions and emails and all that stuff I get from people who are, once again, making their plans to head over to Wrestle Kingdom? It's, you know, it's becoming a destination, Colin. And I think that's only, you know, due to the fact that this product is, you know, couldn't be more red hot. I don't think, you know, look at, I mean, they're selling New Japan T-shirts in fucking Hot Topic, Colin.
And I didn't think that it could get any hotter back in 2015 when we first started this podcast.
Look at our numbers. I mean, you know, look at just in our numbers alone. You know, every day, you know, I wake up and, you know, 12 new people have liked, you know, New Japan Purecast. And
actually, the first thing that I ever said to you on this podcast was, Damon, can you remember the last time New Japan Pro Wrestling was this hot?
Yeah. Yeah. I know, and that was just coming off of like one Hammerstein show.
<You
know>? Yeah. Seriously. It is, you know, silly to think of how this company has grown. And it's really on the backs of Omega, Young Bucks, Los Ingobernables, and to a slightly lower degree, your Okadas, your Tanahashis, your Kushidas, your, you know, those type of people, you know, especially in the U.S., mostly in the U.S., you know, it's you have to give those guys credit, and credit due to how popular this product has become here in the States.
Before we get to the listener Q&A, I had a few last-minute G1 things I kind of wanted to wrap up. Number one, question for you, Damon. When you were at the G1 Climax 25, I believe it was, it was 25 in 2015, right?
Yeah, well, whatever, Tanahashi won.
Yeah, yeah, it was you saw the Tanahashi-AJ match.
Yeah, Tanahashi-AJ, and then Tanahashi beating Nakamura in the finals.
When you were there, was it 4 to a sumo box?
Yep, for the finals. Yep.
Okay. So for these finals, like all 3 nights were sellouts, but they were doing 2 to a sumo box instead of 4.
When I was there. Now, I don't know if they did that on this one. They may have gone each night at Sumo Hall with 4 to a box. They might have.
No, they were doing 2.
Oh, really? That was confirmed?
Yeah, per the Wrestling Observer.
Okay. Okay. Then there you go. Yeah. So when I went, it was they did 3 nights at Korakuen, and then they followed it up with the final 3 nights at Sumo. And it was 2 to a box. Thank God for that. I was like, there's nothing better than just seeing one dude just like, for one night it was me and one guy, and then the second night it was me and a guy and his girlfriend, and then who was like fawning over Ibushi. Loved Ibushi.
Well, we all love Ibushi.
All right, but this one, like, you could tell the guy was getting a little pissed off. Like, he was just like, all right, we got it.
Hey, that's hard to compete. Ibushi's hard to compete with.
I know. I felt bad for the poor guy. I guarantee Ibushi is not his favorite wrestler. That's for sure. And then I think, yeah, well, the last night was I knew I wouldn't survive it. Like, so I stayed up, you know, right when you come through the doors and you go down the first level, I kind of stayed around there and kind of moved around the arena just because I knew I wasn't going to be able to survive 4 hours of sitting on basically a plank of wood with four guys around me. It just was cross-legged, and it just wasn't going to fucking happen. So
these are not comfortable seats for your buttocks, apparently.
Nope. Again, the best way I could describe it is if you want to go to G1, be in shape, right? Don't be a little chubby. Don't be a little portly. Don't be, because you're going to be uncomfortable.
You've got to do your cardio beforehand.
Do your cardio beforehand. Two, what I want you to do is I want you to turn off the air conditioner in your house, right? Put on a G1 show, sit on your kitchen floor, cross-legged for 4 hours. Because that's really what you're going to be doing.
Don't do that, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want anybody to get hurt.
Well, listen, I'm just letting you know that's what G1 is. So it is what it is. Now, again, they have the seats in the second level. You could do that. They're regular seats, movie theater style seats. Not super huge, but they are what they are.
What if I want to be at the commentary booth? Can I do that?
Waiting. I would love one day, New Year Dash, one day Colin's going to be, this is Kevin Kelly alongside Rocky Romero and Damon McDonald, that New Year Dash, and your head's going to explode. I would love that. That would be fun. Actually, you know what? Not for Dash, because they have weird seats at Dash. I think they sit up in the balcony. I want the same seats I got before. They were great on the ramp. Oh, so good. That was so much fun. I hope we get that.
To kind of put the cherry on top of how hot New Japan is right now, they hadn't legitimately sold out three straight nights at Sumo Hall since 1999.
Yeah, but wasn't this one the biggest one? What about I read that?
Highest paid gate because of the higher ticket prices.
Right. I mean, listen, people are paying.
It was the highest gate for a final in history. And again, that is courtesy of the great Wrestling Observer. A few more final thoughts. I know we're kind of dragging this G1 discussion out. If somebody came to you and they told you that they enjoyed Tanahashi versus Naito more than Okada versus Omega, would you understand that?
Yeah, I would. Sure.
Because I did see a comment on the NJPW subreddit. I think it was in our thread, actually, with the latest PuroCast episode. And I did understand where that listener was coming from. Because, I mean, as far as great storytelling goes, I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a better match from the tournament than that Naito-Tanahashi match.
And truth be told, I don't think that their series of matches, their three matches, gets enough credit.
No, and that's the thing. Like this Okada Omega trilogy has been so fantastic that I think that people are forgetting the great trilogy that Tanahashi and Naito had. How about the Kushida Takahashi trilogy? Even though one of the matches was a squash, still.
I agree. There's so I'm shoulder shrugging because it's just like
in any other year, like Tanahashi Naito is feud of the year for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other year.
I tend to agree. It's maddening. It's maddening how not only how great it is, because usually you'll get great stuff in every promotion. Every promotion you can point a finger at and be like, okay, this is great shit. But just the depth of greatness. And yes, there's shit that, again, we hand wave, and there's shit that we, we get accused of being overly negative, and there are times where, listen, you just have enough. You have enough of the multi-man tags, and you just want to, jump out a window. That's part of the deal. But the depth of which the talent steps up, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I really am hard pressed to think, like, what else could people want? what else can people want? And again, we do a show and we need things to talk about. And sometimes we like to stir the pot a little bit. And I don't even think I don't think we stir the pot just to stir the pot. Let me make that perfectly fucking clear. But if you're going to ask me, what do I think about, 700 six-man tags at Cork and Hall? I'm going to be honest, but I'm also going to be honest and tell you that never have I ever have seen the deepness of greatness that we have in 2017 with New Japan.
Well, I was going to ask you one more question, but one of those questions actually coincides with the listener Q&A that we're going to get into. But before we get into that, folks, Damon, you know, when I watch that final and I look around at the sea of people in their LIJ shirts, I often wonder, boy, I would really love to have one of those shirts for myself, but not from Hot Topic. I want it to come directly from Japan. And geez, how can I get one without buying the airfare, traveling all the way to Tokyo? Do you know a way?
I do, Colin. You don't have to step foot in that Hot Topic. Don't embarrass yourself like that.
Please.
Why would you do something like that? You're a grown man. What are you going to get? Again, a My Chemical Romance t-shirt too? Studded belt? What are you, out of your mind?
Are they still a band? I don't even know.
I don't know. Who knows? But I will tell you this, Colin, that for me, for my dollar, it's a simple decision. It's gaijincollectibles.com, Colin. Your number one source for Japanese professional wrestling merchandise shipped straight to your door. Easy peasy, right? Lemon squeezy. It's simple. The good people over there at Gaijin Collectibles, we talk to them a lot, and we are proud to be sponsored by Gaijin Collectibles, because if you want the New Japan stuff that you see at the store, Gaijin Collectibles can get it, ship it straight to your door. You want the All Japan stuff, they can do that too.
How about the Noah stuff?
Colin, you want some Noah stuff? It's a Marufuji t-shirt?
Nakajima t-shirt.
Ah, now you're talking. Guess where you go? You go to Gaijin Collectibles and they can help you out. Simple, easy, and pain-free. That's what I like to say, and that's what I like to deal with Gaijin Collectibles for all of my Japanese pro wrestling needs.
And speaking of merchandise, folks, pretty soon I'm going to be setting up that shop on NewJapanPuroCast.com. We are going to have pre-orders for official New Japan PuroCast t-shirts sooner rather than later. I'm trying to get everything in order here and make sure everything is set up properly. But huge props to our good buddy on Facebook, Brett Spangler, who...
He hooked us up again, right?
Oh, my goodness. He does such tremendous work, and the guy doesn't ask anything in return. You know, I kind of feel bad that he's designing such great stuff for us. And
well, I sent him a little care package to to show our appreciation. I got him a, I got him a little something. So, it's not like he's going completely empty-handed. But, yeah, for the work that he puts in, you know, it's really an amazing thing. And he's a great guy. And may I say, if you have graphic design needs, geez Louise, look up Brett. Because he's a pleasure to work with, a great guy, talented as fuck. And he helps out the PuroCast big time.
Yeah, so folks, keep your eyes peeled on our social media accounts. There will be an announcement coming sooner rather than later. I'm just working very diligently to make sure that everything is set up properly. So you will have that to look forward to, an official New Japan PuroCast t-shirt.
Yeah, and they look, can I say, Con, they look sharp. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I showed Damon a little preview of what is to be expected, and I think that people are going to be quite pleased.
I think so, too. That and the left. Oh, guess what, Colin? I got breaking news for you.
Breaking news.
This weekend, I went shopping for leather jacket.
Oh.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. So, look, all I need is that t-shirt.
What did I tell you the other day, Damon?
What's that?
I told you that come fall, I'm pulling the trigger on the leather jacket.
Make it happen, brother.
Come the fall.
Listen, we'll be like the Midnight Express, man.
Which one are you?
I'm Bobby Eaton. Fuck okay. That. You can be Stan Lee.
All right.
I'm jumping off the top rope, man. Look, we'll be rocking the leather jackets and the PuroCast t-shirts and the pins from Onth. Look, we got it made in the shade. We're gonna be to wrap it up in a nutshell. We're gonna be styling and profiling.
Alrighty, what do you say we get into a little listener Q&A? This is always a fun time.
Love it.
And we've got
like
a lot
speed dating. It reminds me of like speed dating. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I'm going to sit down and answer questions. And, oh, it makes me a little nervous. Oh, okay. Here we go.
Yeah, so I put the APB up on Twitter. And as always, we got a tremendous response. And I think I'm going to start out with our friend Nicholas Herbert on Twitter. And he asks us the question, What are both of your guilty pleasures when it comes to NJPW, either match-wise or wrestler-wise? Well, I think it's quite obvious with me. You know, I kind of turn the corner on not only our boy Yujiro Takahashi, but you know, pretty recently I've been getting into Tai Chi's entrance. I think that the entrance is pretty amazing.
Oh, I can't believe you're saying that. And that really is like, but when the match starts, you're out, right?
Oh yeah, when the bell rings, I mean that's where the allure kind of ends.
Oh my god! Wow. I don't know. I'm really trying to rack my brain, like a guilty pleasure, like because there's not a lot of things I would consider to be kind of cringy or hand wavy in the
promotion. And the cringy stuff you usually hate anyway, so.
Right. I'm
like
not
the
gonna
Yano
like
stuff.
Like, I'm not gonna secretly be like, oh yeah, I can't wait to fucking turn this on and not ever have anyone. You know, it's not like it's a, you know, poison or something. You know, guilty pleasure, New Japan wise, I do like. I can't even say the Young Lions because I think everybody likes the Young Lions.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say. And it's somebody that I've turned a corner on. And I think it has more to do with just how he presents himself and how he carries himself outside the ring and on social media. I'm going to go with Monster Mornings, Colin.
Ah, our boy Manabu Nakanishi.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something... You know, something just that, like, they, you know, we call them the New Japan dads, obviously, right? But, like, it's just, there's something just comforting about him that I don't know. I just, I've warmed up to him. I find him to be completely harmless. And it's not like I'm going out of my way to watch, but, like, when he's on, I'm not quick to lay the boots to, right?
You know what I was thinking of the other day?
What's that?
Do you remember that match that Nakanishi had with Nagata from like late last year?
Yes.
It was like a 4-star match.
Right. I'm going to go there. I might go there. And I also do enjoy, and again, I think people also would enjoy this. I like it when Tiger Mask is a dick. I like dickhead Tiger Mask, right? When he's just a surly, when he's kicking the shit out of Young Lions. I like that version of Tiger Mask. So I'll go that route. Those are probably the two guilty pleasures for Damon right now.
Next question comes from @SuplexSenpai on Twitter. He says, think we'll see Goto and Ishii challenge for the tag titles at Wrestle Kingdom? If not, where do you think they'll both wind up on that show? New Japan Rumble. No, they're not going to be
New Japan
Rumble.
No, I don't think they're. Do I think that they will? I want them to. You know, I've been saying it for months that an Ishii Goto tag team would be fucking perfect.
We saw it in the World Tag League last year, right? Like, it was Goto and Ishii together, was it not?
I thought so, and we wanted, and that fell apart.
Yeah, I remember them having like a. Like a 4-star match with Sonata and Evil, actually. Like, that was one of the standouts of that show. And then, of course, they fizzled out.
I think, honestly, those guys are, you know, in the never mix. That's where they are. They're in the never mix. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I don't know about Dome, right? I think Dome, I'll tell you what I'd like to see. Somebody that get their fucking due. And that's somebody being Michael Elgin.
Yeah.
I'd like to see an Elgin Suzuki at the fucking Dome for the NEVER title, to be truthful. But that's where they are. Where do they land? It's a match somewhere on that show, and I don't think they're going to be a tag team. That, truth be told, put a gun to my head, I don't think we see Goto and Ishii as a tag team at Wrestle Kingdom.
Alrighty, let's see here.
How about you? What do you think, Colin? Don't just blow it off. Don't put the feet under just my feet.
Goto and Ishii. Honestly, I have no. I mean, here's the thing. Tomohiro Ishii. I think he's one of the MVPs of the. I mean, there's. you can make the case for a lot of people being the MVP from this past G1. I think Tomohiro Ishii certainly has to be in the mix. He's still one of my favorite pro wrestlers in New Japan. I think that he's been having, as far as match quality goes, a fantastic year.
You know what's going to be interesting, Colin?
What's
going to be that Unsung Hero Award that we have at the end of the year.
Oh,
that's
going
to be an interesting fucking way that our listeners vote.
I think so too, because I think you're going to have Goto and Ishii in there, but I also think that you're probably going to see Michael Elgin in there.
Yep, I think so too. He would be my pick,
unless he like wins the IWGP Heavyweight Title before the end of this year somehow.
A lot of things got to change there.
Yeah, a lot of things do got to change.
And you know what? I know I have Ring of Honor people. Colin, I know we have Ring of Honor people listening to this fucking show.
Yes.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
Can whatever between Michael Elgin and Ring of Honor, because there is a thing, right? For whatever reason, Elgin can't get booked on Ring of Honor, and he said it publicly, so it's not like I'm, you know, spilling the beans on anything. Can that get fixed? Come on. Jesus Christ. Get Elgin on the Ring of Honor shows, please.
The guy's had an A-plus year in the ring.
I mean, no joke. Come on. Fix this. Make this fucking happen. Will you please? Thank you. That's my rant for the day.
All right. Next question comes from @TWrestlingFan. And this was one of the questions I was going to ask you earlier, Damon. He asks, since watching G1, what match is the most underrated G1 match? The expression, Damon, but I think that a lot of people are sleeping.
Oh. Who said that? What's this guy's name?
What was it? @TWrestlingFan.
All right. Well, sleeping.
Nobody is talking about Ibushi versus Ishii. Like, I rewatched that the other day. What a pleasure that was to watch. What a great match. But, like, again, the plethora of 4-star matches that we've seen throughout this tournament. I mean, a lot of these great matches are getting lost in the shuffle. And I think that is definitely one of them. Ibushi Ishii for me.
I think Omega Suzuki for me.
Yeah.
I still have
to go back and rewatch.
Yeah. Well, you're in luck. If you this Friday, set your DVR. Cause they're doing that match on Access. Go back and watch that one. I think that one gets lost in the shuffle. I think that's an underrated match. And here's the thing, I don't know if I shit on it, but I didn't like the brawling in the crowd and you know that kind of stuff. But I think that falls under the radar to a lot of people. And I think even for me too. But upon rewatching it, it hits a higher mark for me than I originally even thought. So I would go that one.
We've got a lot of people asking about LIJ on Twitter, especially Sonata and Evil. And this one comes from Adrian Gaskin. And he asks, what is the ceiling for Sonata and Evil? Also, when do you see the Elite breaking off? Okay, first part of that question.
We're going to get to your question in a second, but just a fun fact. You want a Damon fun fact?
Sure, I love Damon fun facts.
So, you know how, like, when you're growing up, you're like, oh, if I had a boy, I'd name him blank. Or if I had a girl, I'd name her blank, right?
Right.
So I always wanted to have a boy named Adrian. I don't know why. I wanted to have a boy named Adrian, and I wanted to have a girl named Darby.
Darby, that was a, I had a dog named Darby.
Really?
Yes.
Are you saying my daughter's a dog, you prick?
Hey, Darby was a very handsome golden retriever, I'll have you know.
Ah.
He's a handsome-looking boy.
But it would be like the D'ARBY. I don't know why.
D'ARBY.
No,
what?
I'm wrong.
What
I'm
do you have? No, D'ARBY. That's how you spell Darby. Get out of here with that apostrophe shit.
I want an asterisk. I want D-A asterisk. I want a Intero Bang D-A.
I want an omelet.
I'm
going to name my son Colin Jr., but it's going to have an omelet over the O.
I'm starving. Do we have any omelets?
A ham and cheese omelet.
It's dying. All right.
Thank God you're not having children, by the way. Oh, my God.
Oh, you have no idea. Trust me. I can't even have a potted plant in my office. Are you kidding me? I'm a child. Oh my goodness.
Sonata and Evil Damon.
Sorry.
They're sealing. Now, if you would have asked me this a while back, like for Evil, I would have said, I see him going after the Never title. Obviously I was wrong. Sonata, man, there's a guy who has so much potential. I mean, he's so athletic. You mentioned that he's really got to work on his facial expressions, which is something that I've been taking note of as of late when I go back and rewatch some of those Sonata G1 matches.
We sound like Jim Ross there, didn't we?
yeah, kind of.
Athletic, physicality. Oh, the only thing you didn't say was
I was listening to him commentate last night on that NXT gimmick, so forgive me.
Oh, was he on it?
Yeah, he called one of the matches.
Really? Live?
Yeah, of course.
Huh. Isn't that weird?
It is kind of weird that like the New Japan commentator on Access TV is simultaneously signed with WWE and showing up and doing live show. Like it is very strange.
Yeah. Is it Morrow calling NXT now?
Yes, it is. It is
so
Morrow
and Jim Ross.
Yeah, Morrow, Jim Ross, and you know who else is there?
Got it. Kevin Kelly?
Yes, Kevin Kelly and Don Callis are there.
All
right. Nigel McGuinness.
Oh, yeah. I did know that.
Yeah, him and Morrow together. Boy, what a pleasure it is to listen to them, but I digress.
They had, I know we're all over the map, but correct me if I'm wrong, we had... Red Dragon show up, right?
Yes, we did. Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, and you know who else showed up?
Who's that?
Adam Cole, baby.
My favorite. Wow, they're just...
You know, it's funny, too. Like, immediately after he showed up, one of the Jackson brothers tweeted, "I think I just saw a ghost."
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh, those witty fuckers. That's good. Nice one. Nice job by the Bucks. Look, those guys got that Twitter shit down pat.
They do. They know how to work it.
I certainly think I saw a ghost. That might be line of the fucking day. Wow, that hits home. Nice one. Good work by them. Good boys.
Sonata and Evil, though, Damon. Where do you see... Like, the point I'm trying to get across here is I saw Sonata as the number two guy in LIJ. Now Evil is being positioned as the number two guy.
Yeah.
Heavyweight, that is.
Yeah. I mean, I personally thought it was going to be the flip mode of that, right? I thought we were talking about Evil. We even said Evil take a back seat this time and see what Sonata can do. I agree. To me... The Sonata character is a lot more interesting than the Evil character, right? I think there is a definite, at least to me personally, there is a ceiling on what Evil is and what, you know, he's like a cross between Kevin Sullivan and Michael Elgin, right?
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
You know, so I mean, I don't know how far that goes. I mean, is that money? I personally, and again, who the fuck am I? But I see more money with a Sonata than I do with an Evil. That's just me.
He's got to get rid of that white T-shirt, though, and that mask, please. I don't like it.
All right. Well, look, I'll see what I can do. I'll call somebody. I see a higher ceiling in the long run for a Sonata than I do an Evil. I haven't been proved right on that yet.
No, and, neither have I.
Right. But again, I'm sticking to my guns. And I just think there's more upside with a Sonata than there is with an Evil as we stand here today in August of 2017.
And the last part of that question, when do you see the Elite breaking off? I assume he means the Elite breaking off from the Bullet Club.
Mm.
I do think that's going to happen because I don't think that they did that Tama Tonga pipe bomb in the middle of the match for nothing. I really don't think they did that for nothing.
And now with I'm sure you saw online with the, and again we're getting our palates wet again. We're getting teased a little bit. We're getting googly eyed with the shit that we saw online with Kota Ibushi, right, and Kenny Omega. Right. See that video?
Yes,
I did.
You see that little backstage one, right? Yep.
And that little secret, you know, kind of little exchange, and again, just a little more dipping in to that dream matchup of Omega and Ibushi that everyone is clamoring for. And again, maybe we see that at a dome. Who knows? I mean, we've been strung along for a while now, but very interesting. Very interesting indeed. So where does the Elite go? Yeah, I think even right now, let's be truthful. The Elite feels to me that it's a separate entity than from the Bullet Club, right?
Yeah.
You just, you know who the bottom feeders are in the Bullet Club, and you know that the Jacksons and Kenny Omega are a notch above. Thus the Elite moniker, Colin. So when that happens, I mean, what do you think? You think Wrestle Kingdom-ish?
I think it's going to be this year.
Okay. I'll go with this year. Why not? Sure. This year. Here's the thing, though. I'd be very curious. And again, I don't have the numbers on this, but I'd be very curious as to how that impacts. We always talk about those merch sales, right? Like, if Kenny Omega kind of goes off on his own, how does that impact Bullet Club merch being moved, right? And I'm going to say something, and again, I don't know, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks are driving that force right now.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I don't think that G.O.D. is the driving force behind the Bullet Club.
Right. When somebody goes in there with the intention of buying a Bullet Club t-shirt, you're thinking Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, and maybe even a Marty Scurll.
I'm thinking, right? AJ Styles, personally. But, you know.
Well, you're old school.
That's just me.
I'm a Carl Anderson kind of guy, Colin. I'm a Prince Devitt kind of guy.
Fergal guy.
A Fergal.
That's what I would name my son, Fergal. Fergal Miller.
No, I see. I can't do the Fergal, because here's the thing. In the 80s, there was this guy, Fergal Sharkey, I think it was his name. And he had like these terrible songs, and like, I would never name my kid that, just because I just think of that one guy.
Sounds like a sleazy pro wrestling promoter, Fergal Sharkey, running the VA hall.
I'm doing that Fergal Sharkey show. Yeah, I'm taking tickets.
And like, he'd screw you over at the end with the payday.
You got to sell 20 tickets, you'll be in a battle royal. Yeah, we all know those guys. Yeah, Fergal Sharkey, I just remember that. All right, so that's that. What else we got, Colin? We got a lot of questions this week. I like this.
Yeah, we do. We had a tremendous response, as I said. This one comes from Cameron D.C. Stewart.
I was hoping you said Cameron Diaz.
No, not Cameron Diaz, although I am a fan. What Japanese wrestlers would you like to see wrestle for New Japan that haven't worked for them before? Well, I'm kind of going to answer this question half-assed, because this guy did, I guess you can say he worked for them before. I'd really love to see them get Nakajima. I'm a big fan of this guy. I heard that his match with Brian Cage from Noah was really great, and it is on YouTube right now, so you can just pull it up on there. I do have to go back and watch that, but I'd love to see them scoop up Nakajima.
That's a great pick, actually. I like that one a lot. And truth be told, can't really think of one better. And I've said it 1,000 times before. Like, I am a big fan of healthy promotions all the way through, right? I'm not this guy that's like, scoop up the best talent from everywhere and put everybody out of fucking business. So answering that question does take this all with a grain of salt, mind you. But I think Sakamoto is one of my favorite wrestlers in Big Japan.
Yeah, you talk about him a lot.
He is a big guy, but he moves like a cat, and one of my favorites. Like if you want to kind of get into other things, and you know, Big Japan is on your radar, you're looking at those main events with him. They're always great. But again, I could go Kento Miyahara in All Japan, right? But that would destroy them. I really feel like it would destroy them. And that's a promotion that's really on an upright. For the first time, Colin, I'm worried about getting All Japan tickets when I go over this year. Like, I'm worried about fucking getting All Japan, because they're doing real well houses in Cork and Hall.
And that's great, right?
That's great for business, but shit for me. I want fucking...
You want front row ringside seats.
I'm a very important person, Colin.
Hey, you are. I'm not going to argue with that.
But you could, I mean, truth be told, last year and even the years before that, come on, you could get them day of the show, and you'd be second row, easy. You know, but a Suwama would be nice. Joe Doering would be great. And those are, I mean, Joe Doring's never worked New Japan. He's a big hoss kind of guy. So yeah, but truth be told, I'm not a big fan of scooping up other guys from other promotions just for that reason. So there you go.
Sam Sparing asks, if someone was to get into older NJPW, yes, which show would be the first show to give a go? And he's talking like starting at 2000. I can tell you what I've been doing lately. Actually, I just started doing this, and we're going like way before 2000, but this does fit with the theme of the question. I've been going to Senor Lariato's must-watch list.
Yes.
And if you don't know where that is, you can go to newjapanpurocast.com and click on our resources tab at the top of the page, and we have a link to it right there. But I started off in 1980 watching his highly recommended matches. And what was I watching the other day? I was watching Dynamite Kid versus Tatsumi Fujinami.
Okay.
And I was watching Stan Hansen versus Antonio Inoki. I was watching Hansen versus Andre the Giant. So that's kind of the method I'm using. I'm watching like the highly recommended matches, which are the ones highlighted in gold on the Excel spreadsheet.
Right. Maybe you should link that. Send that a link to that if you can.
Sure. It is on our website, though, just, you know, if you're...
Oh, yeah, it is. You know what? I do remember that. Okay. See, here's the thing with 2000, though. You're getting guys that are kind of at the I don't want to say the tail end of their careers, in the Chonos and the Mudas, and then the Sasakes and Tenrus, and like those kind of guys are, you know, kind of at the tail end of their greatness, right? I'm trying to think back. Like, what did I really enjoy during that time period?
We actually got a lot of questions about the Dark Ages.
Well, see, that's where you kind of got that, like, you know, that obsession with fucking the MMA guys destroying the pro wrestling guys, right?
And that was more like Inoki's brainchild, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he always had that obsession. Yes, yes, of legitimate, like having this, you know, having the pro wrestler fight MMA guys and karate guys and judo guys and shit like that. I mean, look, if I'm you and I'm thinking, okay, 2000 era, and you start at the dome shows, and you'll have your, you know, Kensuke. I always say Kensuke, but it's Kensuke Sakata. I can't pronounce. I fucking stink. You know, we had somebody like just, I love your show, but you can't pronounce their names. And I was like, yep, you're right. I fucking stink. I have a mush mouth when it comes to fucking pronouncing names and or the English language.
Yeah, so, but listen, yes. I've been listening to Brian Alvarez say Kazuchika Okada, and I've been listening to Dave Meltzer say Togi Makabe for years now. And, you know, right. What are you going to do?
I don't know. Like, so if you listen to this show and you're looking for proper pronunciations, I don't know what to tell. I can't even say Colin Miller right. So
Damon McDonald.
Choshu Hashimoto, I remember from a dome show. I want to say it was 2000, 2001, 2002, somewhere around there.
How about Fujita?
Yeah, he's all right.
Not a fan?
No.
Because that was another one of our questions from @goodnightlove35. He wanted your opinion on Fujita from the Dark Ages.
Again, he's not my thing. You know what I mean? Like, he's got that, again, right around this time, you kind of had like, Don Fry back in there. Fujita, if I'm not mistaken, he was in that mix. Like, he was like a K1 guy, if I'm not mistaken, a Pride guy, like a Pride, the MMA guy, or MMA promotion. If I'm not mistaken, he was all about Antonio Inoki. So he was like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree with this guy. So he was all up in the legitimate pro wrestling style, and it just wasn't my thing. You know what I mean? Like, it just was one of those things where it was just like, I found it. Truth be told, I found it pretty boring. And when we talk about those dark times, I just couldn't get into it. Yeah, it's just not my thing. No,
Go back and watch Benoit versus Tenzan. I think from like 2000.
Oh yeah, I remember you going crazy for that one. You liked that one.
That's a great match.
Yeah, matter of fact, I think Fujita is. If I'm not mistaken, he was on a IGF show, like Inoki's promotion, when I was there. The last time I was there, but it was either the last time I was there, and I was just kind of like, I really don't want to see this. I could be dead wrong, but anyway, I wasn't a fan. So to answer your question, all right, next.
Couple more questions. This next one comes from, and I apologize, my friend, I'm about to butcher your name to hell, but Tarun Visal. Again, I apologize for that. That was probably
Brian Alvarez.
Horrible. But anyway, his next question is a very interesting question that has been on my mind for a while now. And he asks, with an almost certain Daniel Bryan in-ring return after his WWE contract expires, how do you see New Japan handling him if he signs? Well, again, this
to New Japan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you really think he's coming back?
Oh, absolutely. Damon, if you've been listening to anything from the past few days, he's made it pretty clear, and his wife has made it pretty clear, that it's not a question of if at this point, it's a question of when. I mean, I know he's been doing the hyperbaric chamber gimmick, which seems to have been helping him.
Wasn't that the main event at Great American Bash 91?
I think he even said he put out a number. He wants to wrestle like 60 times a year. And absolutely, I think, you know what? If you want a hot take, maybe this isn't even really a hot take at this point, but you will see him at Wrestle Kingdom 13.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, it just from listening to the number of dates that he wants to wrestle and what he wants to do. I mean, he's all about CMLL.
Speaking of which, Juice is there.
Juice is there now?
Juice is there now. Yeah, currently with them being taking a little time off after G1. Yeah, he's currently in Mexico. All right, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he loves CMLL. He wants to wrestle there. I think he would love to do stuff with Ring of Honor, you know, both of whom are partners with New Japan. And he was on a podcast recently. I think it was Edge and Christian's podcast. Apparently they have one now. I mean,
everybody's got a fucking podcast.
Who doesn't have a podcast?
Look, you know what? And here's the thing. I'm going to give a shout out. Here's Damon being a good guy. I'm going to give a shout out to a new podcast. It's actually a new New Japan podcast. And I forget their fucking names. but the interesting concept is it's a guy, and I want to say it's his wife or is his girlfriend. I'm not a friend. I don't want to assume. I listened to a little bit of it. I actually did. I thought it was good. But she's Japanese. So she helps kind of fill in the gaps of what people are saying and how they're saying it. And truth be told, you know, it's their first couple of shows. So it's, you know, they don't have the – Listen, they don't have the chops like we do, Colin.
Well, you know, we're seasoned veterans in this New Japan podcasting game.
But if you want a show where they can probably pronounce the names right, you might want to listen to them. but it sounded good. But I like the fact that, see, to me, I would rather have a fan-based podcast. And I'll tell you why. Because you're going to get true actual emotion and true actual feelings and true actual how do I feel about a situation, right? And I really don't think like I think we could have people on our show, right? I guarantee it. Listen, you know who we could have on this show. We've said it 1,000 times. We could have guests on this show.
We could have a lot of people.
I don't and we're very particular on who we would even want, number one. And number two, like having a guy like Kevin Kelly on, I think, is an interesting thing and it's a fun thing. Like, and I would have Kevin Kelly on tomorrow, right? But to have like a worker come on the show and talk about it, like, what are they going to say that you don't already know? You know what I mean? Like, I just find that to be kind of boring.
And I think a lot of other podcasts kind of have that interview a worker thing covered. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many podcasts out there that have these guys on that I kind of do see us more as the fans podcast. Where you
I
and I
too.
Sit down and we have a discussion about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and the listeners are kind of in the backseat listening to us go on this inane journey.
Right. And I think those types of podcasts to me are a thousand times more interesting than, so how did you get started in pro wrestling? You know what I mean? Like, you've heard it a thousand times. You know all the stories. And it's not like you're going to ask somebody, you know, they're not going to jeopardize their career and be like, yeah, that guy's an asshole in the locker. You know, I don't know. Sorry to go on that little tangent, but I love the fact that there's like I wish everybody do a podcast. Knock yourselves out, because the cream usually rises to the top, right?
Right.
And to me, you know, the more people that hear about the product and the more people that enjoy the product, that's what I care about. That's really all the fuck I care about. That and, you know, just praise on Twitter when Colin sends me the the high praise. Right. He texts me just to make sure I'm in a good mood. It usually sets my mood well for the rest of the day when I hear good things about the New Japan Purecast.
Anyway, right, though, before you went off on that little podcast tangent, Damon, yes. I was alluding to this Edge and Christian podcast that Daniel Bryan was on. It sounded like it was a very revealing, candid interview. And I truly do believe that he is going to wind up in New Japan. And I think that, like, the main question that people have is, well, you know, what is he going to be able to do? Well, I ask you to think about this. Think about the fact that Hiroshi Tanahashi just had a 5-star match with Tetsuya Naito with one arm. And, like, those guys weren't doing big move after big move in that match, were they? Like, I don't think they did.
They picked their spots. They picked their moments.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think they did half the stuff that Omega and Okada did. So, like, it's not like...
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not like it was fucking Jerry Briscoe and Dory Funk Jr., right?
No. But
yeah, I think you have a valid point, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that Daniel Bryan has to kill himself and do dangerous things in order to have a great match. You know, we'll see what happens, but I'm a believer. I think he is going to wind up in New Japan. Now, I don't think he's going to be like IWGP Heavyweight Champion or anything like that. I see his role more as like a
Cody Rhodes.
Higher than Cody, a little higher than Cody, but yeah, kind of similar to that for sure.
Okay. Look, if this does come to pass, and Con, you seem very confident in what you're hearing and what the gentleman is saying. Look, you deserve some fucking props because it started out as a little tongue in cheek joke with you. But you have been behind this for a long fucking time.
For over a year now.
And when nobody was really talking about it, nobody would even mention the two names together. So
we'll laugh.
I mean, if this does happen, you got a lot of fucking people that owe you an apology, because I know you got fucking kicked to the curb about this. So here's what I want. Fuck it, I want it to happen just so you get that moment in the sunshine. as Liam would sing, in the sunshine. You deserve it, my friend, if this comes to pass. Good for you.
Well, hey, look, not to toot my own horn, but when I did first start talking about this thing and people kind of hand-waved it, you know, what was eventually printed in the Observer? Oh, Daniel Bryan was really close to going to New Japan in Ring of Honor. And right. Now Meltzer is once again talking about it as if it's a when, not an if. So, you know, just... hang tight. I personally think, to just kind of wrap this question up, you will see him at Wrestle Kingdom 13. So
there you go. All right.
Moving on here, a few more questions, and then we'll go home. Our good friend at Gaming Gumboot.
Ah! Yo,
I know you're a big fan of the Gaming Gumboot.
Listen, this Gaming Gumboot, he's been around since the beginning.
He has. He's an old-school PuroCast listener.
He's got the VIP table. He's earned the VIP table. Where's he from? New Zealand, right?
Yeah, I think he's from New Zealand. Yeah, he is.
All right, crowded house, brother. All right. All right, what do you got?
What is the one thing you want NJPW to change in regards to their actual in-ring, their production, their schedule, or their booking?
I was hoping that he would say fucking ticket situation for Wrestle Kingdom. That's number one.
Mm.
What a nightmare that always. Every year I got to go through this fucking rigmarole trying to get tickets to this show, decent seconds. I went Golden Circle because I'm important. Ugh, what a nightmare I got to fucking get through these tickets. I wish they would change that. Just put them online and let this lottery and this fan club and you need a Japanese address.
Put them on Ticketmaster.
That's what I'm saying. Just come on. That's frustrating. I got to be honest with you. That is really frustrating.
I have a few things on my mind with this question, actually.
What would they change production-wise? I know you want every app, you know, every streaming device, all that.
I do want a New Japan World app on Roku. You know, they did the Amazon Fire, so let's get one for Roku. Let's get one for Apple TV, and then we'll have all the major streaming consoles covered. Unless you want to go to gaming devices, PlayStation 4, Xbox, whatnot. But
I'm going to go with this, and this is the most frustrating thing in life for me right now. Is like you have a song in your head, or you remember a song, or maybe it's on your phone or iPod or whatever, and you go to like to a Spotify, right? You just want to hear the song. We live in a world of instant gratification. You go in, you type it in, and band's not available in your area. Like one of my favorite bands is Suede, and there's zero on Spotify, and it's like, this is my fucking favorite band. Well, I mean, Jesus Christ, I can't listen to them on Spotify, and that's really kind of like become my de facto source of music. I mean, there's plenty of other bands. Menswear, Echo Belly, Gene, Geneva. I mean, all these British bands in the 90s, you know, half of them aren't on fucking platform. Drives me nuts. So for me, I wish they worked out something with the TV networks to get the New Japan TV shows that aired on the network, on New Japan World.
Yes.
Right? That, because truth be told, we are missing tons. I don't just mean a little smidget of, oh, they don't have this match or they don't have that match. They don't have these TV shows on there because they don't own the TV shows, which is mind-boggling in the West.
Like TVSI owns them, right?
Yeah, most of them, from what I understand. And that's where the gold is. That's really where a lot of the gold is. There's a ton of shit that new fans to New Japan have no idea even exists because, you know, it's not made available on the New Japan World streaming network. So if I could change anything, I would hope that, you know, two people could get in a boardroom and figure that the fuck out. That would be most ideal because, like I said, that there's so much great stuff that if you don't have these videotapes or converted to DVD or, you know, on a hard drive like I do,
well,
it's tough to see. If I listen again, once again, fancy Damon. It's hard to see. So and here's the thing with that, you know, that's not something you're going to find on the Real Hero Archive. Every once in a while, he'll put something up there that's New Japan centric, but it's something that, you know, again, it's not if it winds up on the network, you won't, you know, it'll be taken down immediately. Erica will take it down, you know, immediately, which also poses another problem because there's a lot of All Japan stuff right now. You know, they got to deal with the Fight Network, that Fight app. Right?
Really?
Yeah. So they're going to start covering All Japan stuff. So we're kind of, well, he's kind of like, I don't know how this is going to pan out. So whatever.
Not the old stuff, though. Like that will still remain
intact. No. They're not adding shit from the 80s and 90s. But the new shows, you know, that might be that might pose a problem for the fine folks over at the Real Hero Archive. And, you know, that might mean people are going to have to dig into their pockets to now watch All Japan. So troubling times in the Real Hero world. We'll see what happens there.
I'll give you two of my gripes and then we'll kind of close with that because I'm getting the go home sign from our imaginary producer here. Two of my things are I guess related to booking and titles. Number one, as far as booking goes, and I hate to beat the dead horse, but I do still find the booking of their legends in these tournaments to be a bit puzzling. Like we saw it with Tenzan, we saw it with Liger, and most recently we saw it with Nagata. I still don't quite comprehend the logic of having them just lose and lose and lose and lose and then win one random match and then that'll be it. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, I'm not saying that Nagata should have fucking, you know, racked up 10 or 12 points. I'm saying that you can at least make these guys seem, you know, somewhat competitive. And again, I know this is a dead horse. I know that at the end of the day, Nagata still had his moment at the end of the G1, and Liger had his moment, and same with Tenzan. But I don't follow that train of thought of having them lose 20 times, win the one odd match, and then, you know, that's it.
Tend to agree, and I see the other side of the coin of, hey, they're going to put people over on the way out.
Right.
I get it, but I think it's a little extreme on the side of losing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I get it. But I see this other side of the argument too, where people are saying, well, you know, look, you know, they're putting people over on the way out, and that's that. So okay, what's the second one?
My last gripe, and this is probably the biggest one, Damon. New Japan has too many damn titles right now, and I am a big advocate of, unless you are going to do something interesting with it, please get rid of the NEVER title. Get rid of this NEVER title. We have the IWGP Heavyweight. We have the United States Heavyweight. We have the Intercontinental Heavyweight. Unless you are going to have junior heavyweights take on heavyweights and have interesting matchups that you wouldn't normally see outside of a six-man tag match, get rid of this NEVER title. We don't need it.
Yeah, everybody gets a medal, right?
Right. So, everybody gets their effort award. Like, unless you're going to have, like, let me throw this one out there. How about Suzuki versus Bushi? Like, that's kind of an interesting match that I would want to see. Like, what's going to happen there?
Bushi gets squashed. We know that.
Suzuki versus Kushida. Fill in any. Right. Suzuki versus Will Ospreay. You know, make this NEVER title what it was originally supposed to be, which is kind of like mixing up these two divisions and having cool matches.
Yeah.
Why is that so hard to do?
That's tradition, I guess. I guess.
Yeah, but this title itself was supposed to be like almost breaking with tradition in a sense.
Yeah, I would like that. Trust me, I would like it. I would like it. But I will say this too. That doesn't even make any sense. So fuck me.
I was going to say, what could you possibly have to say?
I got nothing. I got nothing. Sorry. I agree. I'm gonna agree with Colin though.
Yeah, we do not need this NEVER title. I think at the Dome, you're going to be seeing, of course, Okada, Naito, Omega, Ibushi, Tanahashi, somebody. And, like, really, we're going to have yet another heavyweight singles title match? You know, throw a junior heavyweight in that mix. Like, a junior heavyweight who wouldn't normally, whose normal position on the Dome card would be to be in, like, a six-man tag. Put them in that NEVER title mix. Why not? A young junior heavyweight.
I will say that takes a little bit of re-education to the fans, because, again, the fans are conditioned. I mean, look at these multi-man tags. You know, if you got a junior in there, you know he's taking a fall, right? So you got to recondition people to believe that the juniors can take on the heavyweights.
Yeah, but this is about me though, Damon. I don't care about these fans. I don't give a damn.
Well, listen, start caring about them, because they're the ones working over the fucking money and popping these gates. So far that's working. So unfortunately, your desires will be placed on the back burner, just like in life.
Yes, that is right. Wrestling oftentimes mirrors real life, doesn't it?
It does. All right. One more question? Two more? How many we got?
That was going to be a wrap, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought we'd go home, wrap things up, and just talk about what is ahead of us in the future here as far as New Japan goes. So the fall schedule is out. The Destruction Tour is going to start on September 5th. And I think that the first New Japan World show that's going to be live is going to be September 7th from Korakuen Hall. And Destruction itself is going to be split over three nights, Damon.
Well, like I said, the business is good. So I'm not always the biggest fan of these types of shows.
Me neither.
I really feel like they're better suited for, you know, one, maybe two good shows, as opposed to spreading it out so thin that, quite honestly, it's hard to kind of get behind. Now, they do have a lot of programs that they can dip their feet into, but three shows. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Business is good.
Destruction in Fukushima on September the 10th. Destruction in Hiroshima on September the 16th. And finally, Destruction in Kobe on September 24th. So September is basically the month of destruction.
It is in life as well.
It's the symphony of destruction.
Symphony of destruction.
Actually, they should use that for they should get the rights to use that as the official theme.
Who has it now? What band?
It's Megadeth. It's a Megadeth.
Is it Megadeth?
Yeah.
Look, you're saying like I'm, you know, me and fucking Dave Mustaine hang out. I don't know.
I assumed you did.
No, trust me, we don't. What do you mean? Did any do that song? What song is that?
Peace Sells.
Peace Sells. I just remember that being in high school. Everybody with that. Do we know any main events for these shows yet, Colin?
I think that they are going right to Okada. Are they doing Okada Evil? No, that's going to be a King of Pro Wrestling, actually. They're saving that for King of Pro Wrestling for Sumo Hall. Okay. We're probably going to see Kushida versus El Desperado, I think. We're going to see Suzuki versus Elgin on this tour. Tanahashi versus Zach.
Zach, okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the main events will be stellar. I don't know if I'm super thrilled about some of the undercard stuff that I'm sure we're going to get. But
and Naito versus Ishii. I think they're going for that right away. Naito defending the briefcase.
Okay. That should be good.
Oh, that'll all be right. Great. Those two always have, you know, 4.25-star minimum matches.
5.25?
Yeah, 5.25, 6.25. You know, it's irrelevant at this point, folks.
It really is at this point. All right. Well, that we got that to look forward to. So three destruction shows right around the corner, kids. So
and not for nothing. It is going to be kind of a nice breather, you know, to sit back and just watch some destruction shows after this just, you know, these whirlwind of G1 shows that we've gone through, which have been fabulous, but it does wear you down.
Listen, I love my pro wrestling, but whew, how great was it this week to not have any pro wrestling to be concerned with? It was really enjoyable. G1, the post-G1 cooldown.
It's going to be nice to just sit back and watch Kushida take on El Desperado, let me tell you.
like kicking back in a beach chair.
Yeah, yeah. Pop open a nice cold one and just kind of enjoy these matches.
There you go. All right, well, look, we got that coming around the corner, so we'll have that covered for you, and I think we'll have some good stuff there. So, all right, why don't we put a bow and wrap this one up, Colin Miller?
I think so, Damon. Grand idea. So, once again, we thank you for submitting your questions on Twitter. I apologize. You know, it's impossible for me to get to each and every one of them, but never fear, we will be doing more of these in the future, so you'll have plenty more opportunities to get in on the PuroCast Q&A, and of course we thank all of our listeners for supporting us each and every week. You know, Damon and I love doing this. We love hanging out, talking some New Japan, and having you guys come along for the ride in the back seat. Remember, NewJapanPuroCast.com is your one-stop shop for all things PuroCast. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher. It's all there, NewJapanPuroCast.com. T-shirts coming very, very soon. I'm working on that. And, of course, our great sponsor, GaijinCollectibles.com. Follow them on Facebook, like them on Twitter. Your number one source for Japanese pro wrestling merch shipped straight to your door. Damon, last minute little on-air production meeting. So next weekend is yours truly, my birthday.
Woo! Everyone wish happy birthday to Colin Miller.
So I think we're going to take a little week off. Little weekend off.
All right.
And then
we're postponing that 100th show, right? We can't. We're going to get there someday. All right. Was it birthday? Is it Sunday?
Yes, birthday is Sunday.
Well, let me be the first, Colin, to wish you a very happy 42nd birthday.
Mentally. Well, no, mentally he's like 87.
Yeah. Well, look, we all wish you a very happy birthday. Have a great day. Drink lots and look, get that leather jacket, all right? That's it. That should be the birthday gift for Colin.
It's coming, folks. Leather jacket and official PuroCast t-shirts are in the works. Damon, any final thoughts from you to wrap up today's broadcast?
Final thought. Again, let's everyone wish Colin that happy birthday when you hear this. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. I'm going to give a special shout out to our good friends on Reddit, the subreddit the New Japan subreddit on Reddit. Great job by them, as always, every week. Listen, the minute you post that show, Colin, guess what? That show is front and center, and it's pinned post.
They are Johnny on the spot.
They are great people over there. The mods over there at the subreddit, great job. I truly appreciate it, and I wanted to give a special shout out to them because everyone on that board. If you're listening to this and you're not over there, that's where the discussion's happening, kids. On Reddit, check it out, /NJPW. So I wanted to give them a nice shout out. Everyone have a wonderful week, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, very good. So on that note, for Damon McDonald, my name is Colin Miller. We'll catch you guys in a couple weeks to get into these New Japan Pro Wrestling destruction. Have a good one, guys.